We're now on Mitzvah Yud Aleph, according to the reckoning found in most editions of the most current editions of the Sefer Chinuch, not the original version. Shelo yimotzei chometz birshuseinu baPesach, so that we had before the mitzvahs asay, the positive commandment to rid our homes of chometz before Pesach. So now it's going to tell us a special negative commandment that shelo yimotzei chometz birshuseinu kol yimei haPesach, that no leaven should be found in our possession, in our domain, for all of the days of the Passover holiday. Shneamar, as it said in the pasuk, shivas yamim seor lo yimatzei bevateichem. So for 7 days, no sourdough shall be found in your houses. Uberu chachamenu zichronim livracha, the sages say, lav davka beso, not specifically in your house, let's say you have an office, let's say you have a car, any place where that you own, ela kol shibrishuso, anything, any chametz that's owned by you, anything in your domain, is in violation of this commandment. And also, of course, it said in the pasuk, seor sourdough, velav davka seor shehu mechametz. In other words, before they had packaged yeast that you could buy in the store, you had to make sourdough, which was very heavily yeast-infested dough, that you took a little bit of that and you put it into your dough, and that became chametz, that caused it to rise. So not just the actual sourdough which you use to cause leavening, but dehu adin lechametz, that the same halacha would apply to any leaven products. Tesor v'chametz chad hu le'inyan yisur. The Torah uses the two interchangeably. So sourdough and chametz are considered one and the same for the purposes of the forbiddenness over Passover.
Why is that? Yeah. Going
bad? Wait.
Yeast itself, though, pure yeast itself is not chametz, though.
Right, yeast itself is not chametz. It's just a fungus. It's not. Right, yeah, yeast isn't wine, and certainly permitted and even encouraged to consume wine during Passover. So certainly yeast itself is not a problem, it's just a fungus, and it's certainly no relevance to the five species of grain, which we learned about last time when we talked about matzah, that are the only things that can become chametz, and are the only things that can be used for matzah. Yeah. Mishor she ha-mitzvah. So the reasoning for the mitzvah, what do you think he's going to say? What has he been saying for the last umpteen mitzvahs? Says, just as I said by Korban Pesach. So here, for some reason, he got a little bored with saying that over and over and over. So he says, "Kidei," he just adds a little bit of embellishment. "Kidei shenizkor leolam," we should always remember, "hanisim shenasu lanu bitzias mitzrayim," the miracles that were done for us when we in the Exodus from Egypt, "kemo shekosuv b'seha pesach," as it says with the paschal lamb. Really just switching around the language that he uses, which is interesting. "V'nizkor she'era lanu ke'inyan zeh," and we should remember that the following occurrence happened to us. "Shemitoch chipazon ha'itzia afinu ha'isa matzah," that since we were, everybody knows the story, of course, since we were so hurried in getting out of the land of Egypt, so we didn't have time for let the bread to rise, rather we baked it unleavened. "Kilo yachlu lismahmea," they couldn't delay ad sheyachmitz until it rose. "Kimo shekasu vayafuas habotzeik," the pasuk says that they baked the dough. It was matzos kilo chametz because it did not have time to rise. Dinei hamitzvah, the halachos of this commandment. Kagon, for example, im hifkid chemtzo biyad acherim adino. Let's say you have your chametz, your bread, in someone else's possession. So what's the halacha? So what do you think the halacha is? The halacha is, if you own it, it doesn't matter if you put it in someone else's possession. As long as you continue to own it, it doesn't matter. So if you leave something, in, let's say someone lent you money and your collateral was some whiskey that you left in their house, so you can't just say, that doesn't matter, it's not in my house, it's not in my car, it's not in my physical locale. It doesn't matter, as long as you own it, as long as it belongs to you, you are responsible for it being gotten rid of. O acherim biyado, or someone else's chametz in your possession, that's also a problem because you're not allowed to have Jewish chametz in your possession over Pesach. So basically, one of you has to get rid of it. V'chein chametz hekdesh biyado oshel goy. Let's say the chametz doesn't belong to you, but it's sitting in your house. The converse case. So let's say the chametz belongs to stuff that is in the really supposed to go to the Beis Hamikdash or for a purposes of a korban. Or it belongs to a non-Jew, of course, is allowed to keep chametz over Passover. Bachrayus v'shelo bachrayus. So there we have a difference of halacha, whether you have what's called achrayus on it or not. Whether, if it gets lost, do you have to pay for it? So let's say if a non-Jew, let's say you lend money and to a non-Jew, and then the collateral... I'm sorry, a non-Jew borrowed money, let's forget this borrowing case. But let's say for some reason your non-Jewish neighbor asks you to watch his bottle of whiskey. Okay, maybe whiskey isn't chametz gomor, not real chametz, but let's assume it is for a second. So let's say he asked you to watch his bottle of whiskey, and he said, but don't worry if anything happens to it, you know, I won't hold you responsible. So if in that case, it's permitted to keep that bottle of whiskey in your house over Pesach, but it has to be behind a mechitza or in a locked cabinet. There has to be some demarcation of the fact that this chametz doesn't belong to you and we're not allowed to eat it. So otherwise, you might get very thirsty for a drink over Pesach. You might pour yourself a shot. So that's a problem. So that's why when we do the conventional selling of the chametz, the mechiras chametz, that's why they tell you, even though it's sold, there has to be some heker, even though now this belongs to a non-Jew, and officially in the document of sale, it's supposed to be that you do not accept responsibility if anything happens to it. If your house burns down during Pesach, and all this chametz that officially, technically belongs to the non-Jew, then it gets destroyed. So officially, it's the non-Jew's responsibility to pay for it. You don't owe him a penny. It was a complete sale. It was completely his. But that is actually not the case with hekdesh. That since if there's something that's hekdesh that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash and you don't have to replace it if it gets lost or destroyed, you actually do not have to put a heker of any kind because nobody touches hekdesh. It's so holy that you're not going to forget. Of course, if you are responsible for replacing it when it gets, if it gets destroyed, then still consider it to have some manner of ownership over it, and that is a problem. Yeah.
What kind of hekdesh could be chametz?
I mean, you could pledge anything to the base of hekdesh.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Just as a donation. Yeah.
They're not that korban, is
there? Right. Yeah. Okay. Right. This is a donation. So. As we see here, so we know that if a non-Jew has chametz in your possession over Pesach, that's permissible. That's the basis of our whole sale of mechiras chametz. And some people have problems with large-scale mechiras chametz because it's a question as to whether you actually have the full gemiras das, the full mental intention to contract the sale, whether you really want him to own it, and if he really wants to buy it. So they have all these mechanisms. I think in Rabbi Willig's sale, he has lots of mechanisms. The non-Jew is very carefully selected to make sure that he knows what he's doing. He knows that he's really buying it, and he pays a large sum of money for it. So it's about... I think it's one pruta per person or something. So
it's one pruta.
It's a down payment, right. Which meaning the non-Jew agrees to completely purchase the thing with his down payment, right. And the rest is not an outstanding claim that he doesn't own it if he doesn't pay the rest of the money. Rather, it's considered a debt from him to the owners of the chametz. Independent of any transfer of ownership. He completely acquires ownership of the chametz when he pays this. But still, and I think he also has the fellow walk into someone's house on Pesach and take some chametz out and things like that. A little, cute shtick to make sure that you really have in mind that it should be a real sale. But yet, still some people are machmir that really, when it comes down to it, you don't really think that you're selling it. Again, the common practice is that people do rely on it, but there are people who are. There are many technical reasons for the whole thing. The whole is a very technical discussion beyond the scope of this year. But there is room to be stringent in this.
Also fairly recent,
Limba. Yes, that is true. The Tosefta discusses a case where you're coming on a ship and you have some chametz with you and you don't know what to do with it, so you sell it to some non-Jew who's on the ship, and then it says you're allowed to buy it after Pesach. The question whether it has to be a complete sale, you really don't have in mind to take it back after Pesach, you just you have in mind for it to be a complete sale, and if it happens to be still extant after Pesach, so you're welcome to buy it back. It's a question whether such a thing is called a harama, a trick. So if you really have a mind to sell it only for Pesach and to buy it back right afterwards, some have problems with that, some don't have problems. It's a very complex discussion.
It actually became widespread when Jews were in the liquor business, mm-hmm. and in the grain business, in Eastern Europe and Russia, a large scale, mm-hmm. Probably around the 17th century or so.
The 17th century, okay. Yeah, okay, interesting. Yeah, so when they got into liquor business, the Jews got into liquor business, so it was a huge hefset if they had to get rid of all their chametz before Pesach, so they had this mechanism to sell it. Also, nowadays, food is stored much differently. We have freezers and we have pantries, and food keeps for months and months and months. So it's hard to plan exactly all the everything you're going to use up exactly right before Pesach. So for that reason, some people feel that we should be make all still. That's the prevalent custom. But again, also, food's much more available now. So, in other words, that's not such a big deal. If you get rid of all your chametz before Pesach and you have to go shopping again afterwards, big deal. Anyway, different sides to the issue. Famously, the Vilna Gaon did not accept the Mechiras Chametz, but it's not clear exactly why. Some say that in his day they didn't do all the proper mechanisms that for selling the chametz that we do nowadays. Nowadays we're stringent to have the non-Jews buying the chametz perform 6 different types of acquisitions to make sure he really got it. Maybe they didn't have all those chumras in those times, so maybe he would accept it nowadays. But nah, that's not. Most people who follow the Vilna Gaon don't sell their chametz for Pesach. Some people still, even if they are stringent and they actually get rid of their chametz before Pesach, some people still like to perform mechiras chametz because, it makes them feel better. Whatever, everybody's doing mechiras chametz just in case you miss something. But the truth is, you don't have to do that. If you did your best to get rid of all your chametz before Pesach, and you don't have any edible chametz left in the house, then it's not necessary to perform mechiras chametz. I heard in the name of Rabbi Belsky, from Torah Vadas, that he used to specifically not perform Mechiras Chametz, so he'd get rid of all his Chametz before Pesach, and he would say he wants to dispel the notion that the people think there are 3 ways that Chazal instituted to dispose of your Chametz before Pesach. You need Bedika to check your house for Chametz, and you need Bittel, and you need orally nullify any chametz that might be left, and you need to sell it. Those are the 3 ways that our sages instituted. So he says he wants to dispel that notion that there are only 2 ways that Chazal said to get rid of your chametz before Pesach. So specifically, he did not perform mechiras chametz. Apparently, he does now because he has some pills that are a shaila or something that he can't get rid of. So he does perform mechiras chametz for those pills. But Be'etzem, if you don't have any chametz left in your house, you don't. If you do your best. You don't have to perform mechiras chametz.
You mentioned whiskey is not vada chametz.
Yeah.
Is there chametz d'oraisa, chametz d'rabanan? What are the various distinctions made?
There are things that are chametz d'oraisa, and there are things that are chametz d'rabanan. Yeah, but the issue with the whiskey is not a d'oraisa d'rabanan issue per se. The question is whether once it's distilled, whether the distilled liquid this still maintains the halachic properties of the original item that it was distilled from. That's the issue about whiskey. I think that most do treat it as real chametz. So there are some people who have the practice that they don't sell chametz gomor. They don't sell real chametz. So I never quite understood what that was all about, because if you don't, if let's say, what do you have left in your house? If you have kidneys, you have legumes that are only a minug. If you have matzah shira in your house, that's also only a minug to eat it. So you don't have to perform mechiras chametz. So what's the point of just performing mechiras chametz for non-chametz gamur? So some people have things. So what this might refer to is things like flour that I mentioned before, that nowadays all the grain that's used in the production of all flour pretty much is soaked in water so as to make it easier to grind. And therefore, we cannot use it to bake matzahs even b'shas adchak, even in an emergency situation, because it might well have become chametz. But still, we're not sure. You know, probably it didn't really become chametz. It, in order to become real chametz, the grain has to split. Certain physical processes have to happen to it. So some people keep flour in their house during Pesach, and because they assume that we're not sure it's really chametz, but yet they would sell it. Even though they wouldn't keep bread in their freezer over Pesach and sell it, still they would keep flour in their house and sell it. Something like that, I guess, is what this is referring to. V'din goy alom shehifki lo chametz. So let's say you don't really have a choice. You can't work out a deal with your non-Jewish neighbor who has his chametz in your house, and you know he's a strong-armed person, and he's not going to let you get away with not paying for the chametz, let's say if it gets destroyed or something. So if that's the case, then you do have to get rid of it before Pesach, because it's considered the equivalent as if you accepted responsibility for it. Kibel achrayos. So then, if you know that the owner of the non-Jewish owner of the chametz is won't let you get away with it, he's going to force you to pay, then you do have to get rid of this chametz before Pesach, and then presumably give your neighbor his money. V'din taroves chametz imovrim alav. And what about a mixture containing chametz? Are you fully liable for keeping it in your house over Pesach? And that's a huge sugya that we're not gonna get into right now. Exactly what type of mixture is it, how much of the mixture has to contain, and when it gets Pesach time, ask a specific shayla if you have something that contains chametz in it. The hapas she'ipsha madino. What's the halacha about bread that got moldy? So we know there's a halacha that chametz that has become inedible to the extent that even a dog wouldn't eat it does not consider chametz for the purposes of violating the prohibition of owning chametz on Pesach. So therefore, if the bread got so moldy that even a dog couldn't eat it, then you do not have to perform destruction of chametz for this bread. Same thing too. I mean, there are details to be had in all these things, but the basic idea is, for example, also if you use flour. They used to use flour as one of the stages of tanning leather. So if that's the case, and you have dead skins floating in flour solution, then you're allowed to keep that over Pesach, because it becomes completely disgusting and inedible. And this is the issue that some have issue with, why all these things like toothpaste and other household products nowadays, we insist on having a hechsher for Pesach, where it's not actually edible for a dog. So that's I've seen hand creams with a hechsher for Pesach. That's even less. Toothpaste, maybe consider it a food in some way. Probably not, but hand cream certainly. There's a halacha called sicha kishtia, which means that if you rub something on your body, it's as if you're drinking it. But that doesn't apply to things that are inedible. So that's the simple understanding, at least. It is reported that some big rabbis would not use soap because they were afraid it contained lard. And then they rubbed it on their skin, then it would be considered drinking. Sicha be due to the principle of sicha kishtia. But that's not what Rabbi Schechter points out. He has an article about this, that the simple understanding is that it's not relevant if the thing itself is not edible. If it's only talking about things like oil, if you have olive oil and you want to rub it as a moisturizer on your skin, then we would say sicha kishtia, that anointing yourself is like drinking. But if it's hand lotion or something completely inedible that or soap, that principle does not apply. Yeah.
There may be been some basis years ago when soap was not entirely saponified. In other words, soap, because of the fat, which is combined with lye, you know, which causes it to split into glycerin and fatty acids.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a concern, which may have been, that in fact some of the lard, whatever it was that it was made from, was still present in the soap. So it was a mixture of what was something inedible with something that might have possibly been edible.
Okay, but even if the soap was combined of little particles of lard that was still edible, the lard would still be considered edible? It wouldn't have absorbed the taste from the rest of the soap?
Soap would not be edible. It would definitely
be edible. I don't know.
Even bacteria can't live on it.
So. Right. But that's why sometimes you see a hechsher on soap, especially in Israel. You see soap and shampoo with hechsher. The reason is they want to make sure it doesn't contain any non-kosher ingredients for this chumra, that we would consider it to be sicha kishtia on the soap. But that's it's really, according to the halacha, that's not necessary. The noheges bizacharim. I'm sorry, v'yeser protem mevar mepesach rishon. So look in the beginning of Maseches Psachim, and you'll go through in great detail all the issues of what types of things are prohibited for one to own during chametz and whatnot. During Pesach and whatnot. V'noheges bizcharim unikevos. Of course, this applies to both men and women. It's a negative commandment. You wouldn't even have any supposition whatsoever that it would not apply to women. B'chol makom v'chol zman. In all places and all times. The over aleha v'nimtza chametz birshusa. Let's say you violated this prohibition and unleavened products are found in your possession over Pesach. The mazid, and you did it on purpose. You didn't just, oh yeah, I didn't do such a good bedikas chametz. It was you wanted to keep stuff in your freezer and you didn't perform mechiras chametz. Over avar al shnei lavin mishum bal yeroi uval yimotze. So you violated two negative prohibitions. You violated bal yeroi, that should not be seen, and bal yimotze, and it should not be found. We're going to discuss that a little bit later. Also, in mitzvah chaf, the loke kolzman sha'asa bo maisa. And you receive the penalty of lashes as long as you performed an action in violating this mitzvah. Kegon shechimeitz isa v'hinicha beveso. Let's say you took yeast or sourdough or something and you made dough and you put in the yeast and you let it rise while it was in your possession. So then that is considered performing an action, and therefore you would be liable for the penalty of malchus of lashes if you did such a thing on Pesach. Osha loka chametz v'itznio beveso. Let's say you took chametz that you didn't previously own, and you took it and you put it in your closet. You went to the store, you bought chametz, put it in your closet. That would also be considered an action, and you'd be subject to the penalty of lashes. If you didn't do any action, let's say you just left it in your freezer and didn't do anything about it. You didn't destroy it properly or sell it. Ein loke alav, you do not receive the penalty of lashes. There is a halacha that states, lav she'ein bo maise, ein loken alav. A negative prohibition that does not entail the performance of an action, we mentioned this before, one does not receive the penalty of lashes. One has to perform an action. Kemosha Marnu, as we said. Of course, the Sefer HaChinuch doesn't mention this here because this is a rabbinic commandment, but a related rabbinic commandment. Sefer HaChinuch is only discussing mitzvos midaraisa, the 613 mitzvos that are contained in the Torah. But there's a rabbinic halacha, midrabanan, that someone who violated this commandment and had chametz in his possession over Pesach, we are not allowed to eat the chametz anymore as a penalty for the fact that he or she violated the prohibition of keeping chametz in his or her possession over Pesach. So all the rest of the Jews are not allowed to eat this after Pesach. So there is an actually opinion amongst the Tanoim that this actually is a halacha d'oraisa, and actually any chametz that was in the world during Pesach, even if it was owned by a non-Jew, whatever, all chametz that's in the world becomes prohibited over Pesach. Whereas the opinion that we paskin like, the opinion that we hold by, says that it's only a penalty for a Jew if it was in a Jew's possession and the Jew did not properly dispose of his chametz during Pesach. It's not edible, it's not a problem. You're allowed to keep it. So for this reason, they publish lists after Pesach of stores that are under that are certified treif, you know, and usually we look for kosher certification, that the store is managed by Jews and owned by Jews, and, you know, they're keeping a watch on everything they sell and the kashrus and whatever. So after Pesach, we look for a quote-unquote hechsher on the store that it was owned by Jews, owned by Goyim, the distributor was not Jewish, to make sure that the chametz was not in possession of a Jew over Pesach. Imagine how the world would be different if we paskin like the other opinion in the Gemara, that all chametz in the world becomes asur during Pesach. There would be no mechiras chametz, there would be no anything. It would be crazy. We'd have to make everything fresh after Pesach. So we should be glad that we don't paskin like that. It says also that about the Vilna Gaon, that he was even stringent, since he didn't agree with the practice of mechiras chaselling the chametz, that he was even stringent that he would not eat chametz that was sold by a Jew over Pesach, unless it was... He really sold it. I mean, if he really sold it to the non-Jew and expected the non-Jew to keep it and didn't expect it back, that's a different story. But if someone sold his chametz in the mass scale mechiras chametz, then the Vilna Gaon would not eat from that chametz after Pesach. He would probably have a cow with what some people in Breuers do, which is actually they're so nervous about the rabbinic prohibition of chametz shavar lav haPesach, of chametz that was owned by a Jew over Passover. They actually, many of them stock up on chametz before Pesach and sell it, because they hold their mechiras chametz works. You know, it's perfectly good and legitimate, and they stock up on chametz before Pesach, and they sell it, and then they have their stock for after Pesach, so they don't have to worry that if they go to the store that the chametz might have been owned by a Jew before Pesach. So you have opposite extremes in terms of a relationship of a particular individual or community to this halacha of mechiras chametz. Some people have a compromise. I think the normal approach by those who are stringent and don't rely on selling of the chametz is that personally you don't sell your chametz over Pesach, but you're not stringent to refrain from eating because it's only a rabbinic halacha. And there are a lot of kulas about it, so they're not stringent to refrain from eating chametz that someone else sold over Pesach. Because you know, most people who refrain from selling their chametz aren't doing it because they really have, they're huge poskim and they look through all the halachic sources and they decide that's for sure no good. They're just doing it because they want to be stringent for themselves. They don't want any possibility of violating the Torah prohibition of having chametz in your possession over Pesach. The truth is, sometimes it gets a little bit ridiculous, the selling of the chametz. I've seen Jewish stores that have, they close during Pesach. They have huge windows in the front. They know nothing, no secrecy whatsoever. You know, you can look in the store over Pesach. The shelves are fully stocked with tons and tons of chametz. I guess you don't have the choice because you have so much inventory, you can't sell it all before Pesach. But I have to admit, it rubs me the wrong way to see Jewish stores openly, lain kol, fully stocked with chametz products over Pesach. If somebody, has stuff left in their house and they can't get rid of it, and it's a small amount, and they put it off to the side and they sell it, that's one thing. But to just sell everything is, I don't know. Okay. I was once in Muncie for the last days of Pesach, And apparently there's one store that's certified. Most of the stores where people shop in Muncie are Jewish-owned. They sell, you know, they're mostly kosher supermarkets. Really, there's one store on the outskirts of Muncie that's certified completely Goyisha-owned. And after Pesach, it was mobbed with everyone buying their flour and all their stuff because they wanted to stock up before they got things from their suppliers. And the suppliers, the wholesalers, could be Jewish, so that's a problem. But I've seen expressed, the practice seems to be that you do investigate a little bit to make sure that the stuff wasn't, you investigate the store a little bit so that if it's, you know, if it's 2 or 3 weeks after Pesach, and the supplier of the store is owned by Jews or potentially owned by Jews, so the prevalent practice is not to buy there. Once it gets to weeks and weeks after Pesach, Lag BaOmer, I think, is the date people give. So once it gets to a few weeks after Pesach, so then already you don't have to be worried anymore. You don't have to, even if it happens to have been owned by Jews during Pesach, it doesn't matter because most of the stuff is okay, and you don't have to worry yourself to the extent that, you know, maybe there's a chance that it might have been because it's only a rabbinic law, so we have a rule that Safik Derabanan Lakula, if there's a doubt about if this is forbidden rabbinically or not, then we're allowed to take a lenient approach and we're allowed to purchase and consume that chametz. There is a prominent posek known for his very lenient opinions who holds that this whole thing is ridiculous. You don't have to look into it at all. You can buy in any store after Pesach because you're not sure. It's a suffix. You don't have to make yourself crazy. You don't even have to investigate. If you know that there's a likelihood, there's a major likelihood or for sure that it was owned by a Jew during Pesach, so for sure not. You can't buy there. You can't eat it. But if you don't have to, even if it's possible to investigate with relative ease, those that are not obligated to investigate, for you can buy from any regular store starting immediately after Pesach. That's not the commonly accepted opinion. Certainly not in Washington Heights. Interesting. I've heard actually that a very prominent Rav in Manhattan, is probably exaggerated in the way it was told to me, but his wife goes out Motzei Pesach, the night after Pesach, goes to a bodega, completely goyish-owned store, and buys all of her stuff for like 6 months or something, most of the rest of the year, because because if it's any later, it might be Chametz Shavua Pesach, and if it's and then after that point, after those 6 months, so we start getting in, or maybe even for the whole year, if after that point you start getting into issues of Chodosh, so if you buy Motzei Pesach, that's the only way you can be 100% sure that it's neither Chametz Shavua Pesach nor Chodosh. So, anyway. Okay. Progressing to Mitzvah Yud Beis. Shelo lechol mikol davar sheyesh bo chametz. So, this is a separate mitzvah, apparently. Not to eat anything containing chametz. Before, we had, this is a prohibition of eating anything containing chametz. So what does this mean? Shelo lechol midvarim sheyesh bohen chametz, ve'afal pi she'ein ikar hadavar chametz. We're not allowed to eat anything that has chametz in it, even if it's not the main body of the food item. Kigon kuta chabavli, such as kuta chabavli, which was a dish made with breadcrumbs and whey, things like that. The chayotze bo, similar thing. Shenemar, the kol machmetzes lo sochelu. Kol machmetzes. Any leaven, you should not eat. Uperishu zichronim livracha. The sages explained, she'inyan hakosuf hazeh yore bazeh, that this pasuk is talking about this issue. Shekach kiblu haperish bo. That's the accepted interpretation of this verse. V'das harambam zichronim livracha. The opinion of the Rambam is as follows: Sheim yesh b'macholim elu kizayis chametz b'chdei achilas pras asur min haTorah b'lav. That if in any of these food products there is a ratio of chametz to non-chametz to the extent that if you ate this food product for the length of time of kidei achilas pras, which not exactly sure how it is, somewhere between 2 and 9 minutes, if you continued eating this food product for between 2 and 9 minutes, you would end up eating an olive's bulk of the chametz itself, then that is that's what the Torah is including here as part of the explicit negative commandment not to eat anything containing chametz. Kilomer lemalkus of alola kares. So a mixture of this ratio would be it would be prohibited to the extent that you would receive lashes for violating it, but not to the extent that you would receive kares. As opposed to, of course, eating a sandwich or something like that, where it's certainly clearly bread there, then you would be liable for kares also. Mikevan shenis arev barov. Once the chametz ceases to be the majority of the mixture, until going all the way down until it's a quantity of olives bulk in a kedei achilas pras, you get lashes. And if it's less than kezayis in kedei achilas pras, v'im lo yeh bohem kezayis chametz b'chdei achilas pras, lo yeh bo malkos elamakas mardus. There you don't receive the Torah prohibition of lashes, but rather the rabbinic penalty of lashes for doing something you're not supposed to do, even though the Torah does not prescribe an explicit penalty for that. Levi she'enu asur min haTorah el midrabanan. It's only rabbinically prohibited. V'chein kasa b'chibur ha'gadol. That's what he wrote in his great work, the Mishneh Torah. V'im kein, if so, l'dayto yavo halav hazed d'chol machmetzes So with this chame, this prohibition, this pasuk is talking about kol machmetzes lo sochel. You should not eat any leavened product. What does it mean? It's going on lahecha shenis arev kezayis chametz b'chdei achilas pras, and that would receive a separate negative commandment. But what the separate negative commandment is telling you, kolmar malkos velo karis. You receive only the penalty of lashes, and not the severe penalty of kares. However, this is another case where the Rambam and the Ramban don't see eye to eye on the counting of the mitzvos. As we said, the Ramban wrote a whole bunch of criticisms of the Rambam's Sefer HaMitzvos. The HaRamban Zichrona Livracha, Kosef Hefech Mizeh, he wrote exactly just the opposite. This is not even to be counted. Not that it's an extra lav that comes to tell us that you receive lashes and not kares. It's not even to be this pasuk where it says kol machmetzes lo zochelu is not even to be counted as a separate negative commandment. Ella shehu min halavin harabim shebo b'chametz uvasor. It just Torah throws out a ton of languages. In the verses in Parshas Bo, don't eat this, don't eat that, don't eat this, don't eat that. This is just one of the instances where it's telling us that we're not allowed to eat leavened products during Passover. V'ze'alav ba'lahoros amash amru chachamim ba'gemara. Ein li elin es chametz me'ilav. What the pasuk is telling you is that it's telling you like the sages explained in the Gemara, that you might think that it only applies, the prohibition against chametz only applies to something that just become, that leavens naturally. If you put in something else that causes it to become chametz, tamalomar kol machmetzes. So it's telling you kol machmetzes, even something that you explicitly put in, a leavening agent to help it become chametz, it's also prohibited. Aval be'inyan chametz shenis arev, but this doesn't have to do with chametz that got mixed in. Kolzman sheyebo kezayis bechdei achilas pras b'zein tzorich la b'fnei atzmo. The Ramban says that if it's to the extent that there is an olives bulk in a kedei achilas pras, you wouldn't need a separate commandment, like the Rambam says. That's included. The rehu ki'iluhu be'en. For all prohibitions in the Torah, we have a principle that if there's an olives bulk in a kedei achilas pras, it's as if you're, even though it's mixed in, it's considered you're eating the actual prohibited item itself. The Yesh Bo Kares, unlike he's more stringent than the Rambam, even though he holds that there's not a specific negative commandment that prohibits this, it's worse really because it's included in the Kezayis and Kedei Achilas Pras is included in the general prohibition of Chametz, which incurs the penalty of Kares. The imloi habitarovis kezayis bichdei achilas pras. If the mixture is not so much as an olives bulk in kedei achilas pras, ochlo pater, Aval aser. So you receive no penalty, but it's still prohibited. Shalacha kedivrei chachamim she'amru. The halacha follows the sages who said, al chametz dagan gomor anush kares. On real leavened products from the five species of grain, you receive the penalty of kares. Echol shehu kezayis b'chdei achilas pras. Dagan gomor nikra. Anything that's a measurement of an alv's bulk in a kedei achilas pras is considered chametz dagan gomor. Real leavened bread. Not bread, but whatever. Grain products. Avali ruvo kolomar shu pachos mikizayis bichdei achilas pras. If it's less than that measurement, beloklum, you're not liable at all. Udeloki Reb Lezer de Palik alayhu begimara v'amaral ale ruvo belav. That is a differing opinion of Reb Lezer, who says that even if it's a smaller amount, you still have violated a real negative commandment. So according to the Ramban, it's considered as if you ate a sandwich, if you ate a mixture of kezayis chametz in a kedei achilas pras. Mishorshe mitzvah, what's the reason for this mitzvah? Kimoshe kasavnu baseor, just as we said regarding the sourdough, the last mitzvah. So here he doesn't want to repeat himself again. He's just telling you again all the nice miracles that happened to us when we left Egypt. We want to remember them. Yeah. The ulam lechazek hadavar bilibenu hirchikasnu haTorah mimenu kolkach. The reason that the Torah goes to such lengths to prohibit us from eating chametz in so many different forms is because that he really wants to drill it into us that chametz on Pesach is really bad. And judging by how careful, Baruch Hashem, how careful the Jewish people is normally regarding a proper observance of Pesach, even people who are not super frum, they'll still, as long as they, consider themselves in a traditional, somewhat halachically observant lifestyle, they normally will observe Pesach properly, more or less. Can't guarantee that, obviously, but it's one of the mitzvahs that the common practice of the Jewish people indicates stringency. It was actually just a funny line I heard in the name of a Rav in Queens that, as you know, some people have the practice not to eat in other people's houses on Pesach because people have different stringencies, different minhagim, different customs about what they're allowed to eat on Pesach, what they're not allowed to eat on Pesach. And since the penalty for eating chametz is so severe, it's kares, that in case they didn't do something right or they weren't as careful as possible with the dishes, whatever, some people have the practice that they don't eat in anyone else's house on Pesach. So this Rav in Queens said, so this practice is called mishenzich, to mix up with other people food. So this Rav in Queens said, what, on Pesach, I mish, there's no problem. What could be so bad? Everything. The Jewish people are so careful about Pesach, and nowadays, hechsherim, there are lots of it. There are hechsherim on food. They're watching it carefully that there shouldn't be any chametz whatsoever. All the hechsherim, most hechsherim that people normally rely on are good. Yeah, no problem. I mish on Pesach. But on Sukkis, I don't mish, because everyone's responsible for building their own sukkah, and who knows what they could do wrong. And nah, Sukkis, no. That's funny. Anyway. Dinei ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah, kigon ha-dvarim she-nichlalu be-isser zeh, mahein u-mashmam. Different types of mixtures. The third parak in Psachim details, it begins elu over in ba-Pesach. These things go bye-bye during Pesach, as a loose translation. And it gives a whole list of things, mixtures of chametz that you have to get rid of on Pesach. The Yeser Prateha Bipsachim. Again, in the third parak, you'll find all the details regarding the Pesach. I mean the mixtures of chametz over Pesach. But noheges b'schar munkevos b'chal makom b'chal zman. Again, it's males and it's applicable to males and females in all places and all times. V'over aleh aloke. If you eat a mixture of chametz on Pesach, you receive lashes. Uvitnai sheyeh bohen kezayis b'chdei achilas pras. Again, it has to have this measurement. K'mo she'amarnu, as we said. Aval ein bo kares ladas haRambam zichron avracha. This does not incur the penalty of chametz kares according to the Rambam. Ladas haRamban zichron avracha. There is kares as we discussed. B'mein bo kezayis b'chdei achilas pras ein bo chiyav malkus. If there's not this measurement, you don't incur the penalty of lashes. Ela dino kedin chatzi shir she'asur min haTorah. We have a principle that even though you don't receive a penalty, a punishment of kares or malkus or whatever, unless you eat an olive's bulk of the prohibited substance. Same thing, if you eat, let's say you eat pork, you would not receive the penalty of lashes unless you ate an olive's bulk. So if you eat less than that, well, I'll say, I really just all my life I wanted to taste a nice pork chop, or I wanted to taste lobster. So let me eat less than an olive's bulk. Well, no problem, I won't receive lashes. So the truth is that is also prohibited biblically. It's asur midaraisa. You don't receive the penalty. You're not even allowed to purposely eat even a tiny, tiny bit of prohibited foods. Vein lokin alav, you don't receive. So same to here. If you eat a mixture of, you're not allowed to even eat a mixture of chametz on Pesach. Vein lokin alav, you don't receive the penalty of lashes. Uvezeh yodu shneam zichron olivracha. Both of these. The Ramban and the Rambam certainly both agree that one is not permitted to eat even a small amount of chametz in any form of mixture over Pesach.